Hello, everybody, and welcome to C-Lab. This is Dave Darrington, and we're here again to explore how we build customer education, customer experience, customer success programs, experiment with new approaches, and as we always say, exterminate the myths and the bad advice you might get that stops growth of our SaaS businesses dead in its tracks. And today, we have two guests. This is going to be a fun episode because we're going to learn today about Uplimit. And Zaid, I'm happy to have you here. We'll just do quick hellos, and then we'll get into some deep introductions because I want to learn all about you, where you're coming from, what your products are about. And Yash, it's great to have you on from Clay. You know, both you guys, this is going to be fun. So if you're ready to go, just say hi and we'll start diving in.
Hey, Dave. Hey, Yash. Thanks for having us today.
Yeah, it'd be fun. Okay, let's do the warm-up. So every week or every time we do this podcast, I'd like to start off with just the International Day Of. We go out online. I'm not going to show this on screen because we do this in the audio. So I've picked a few. And if you have that link up as well, there's a couple days of the year today that I thought were kind of interesting. What strikes your fancy today? What of the days of the year we talk about, what is the most interesting of all of the options we've got? And we've got what, Random Acts of Kindness Day? And Global Tourism Resilience Day. I want to learn more about that. There's a few others that are popping out there too. Ashnacht, I don't know, it's like some pre-fasting day. What are your thoughts? Your day of?
Yash, curious, you go first.
Yeah, so I think I love the like International Day of Kindness, right? Like I think Random Acts of Kindness is great. I'm all about Random Acts of Kindness. I think it's really great to just do something small that brightens up anyone else's day. I'll probably go out and give a team member a compliment that I wasn't thinking about giving them, or maybe give someone a snack or food. That would be really fun. That's going to be the one I'll adhere to for today.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Zaid, what do you think?
I mean, I was going to plus one that one, which for those that haven't worked in tech, with what Yash is saying. I think International Day of, I think, too often we forget that showing up kindly is the most important thing that human beings can do. It's easy to like make fun of things like International Day of Kindness, but like,
right?
What if every day was the International Day of Kindness?
No, I think we all,
And like showed up that way in every conversation we had and truly thought about the impact we have on people when we do give compliments or feedback or constructive sort of like guidance to folks. Uplimit has what I often call a very nice culture. And I am obsessed with that culture. And so it is like, I wish it for all people to live in this world of kindness and niceness.
I can tell when we'll talk about this in a minute, but when we met and you were, you know, presenting and talking about your product with an audience, that I could tell. So let's roll into this. We got a lot to cover. I've got a lot of really key questions for you, and I want to learn more. Our audience wants to learn more. So today, this is, of course, a sponsored conversation, sponsored episode. Uplimit, you know, Zaid, we're really thankful to have you here. We want to learn more. So the point of this is not necessarily do a product tour. You can get that online, go visit, check it out. But what we're going to talk about today is something that's valuable for all of us. And it's this constant exploration of this shift that's happening right now. Particularly, I think the edge that we connected on was around enablement, but it's also, broadly speaking, enablement is customer education too. We're a part of it. So you might have internal partner, customer, you have this whole dynamic. And here's where we want to start. So AI has officially crossed the chasm, right? You know, it's not just that going to a conference and everybody's talking about, you know, the keynote theater where somebody's up there talking all about, you know, oh, AI ate this. No, I want to see it. Now, this is part of our job description. So the real question is no longer can AI create content or help service my customers or make learning personal. It's now can AI change behavior? So, you know, learning, if learning doesn't change behavior, it doesn't get the outcomes we desire, it doesn't matter. So I'm let's unpack that. Now I've got, Zaid, why don't you introduce yourself? You're the CRO and CCO at Uplimit. Tell us a little about you and your background.
Yeah. I'm the Chief Revenue and Customer Officer at Uplimit. I've been in the education enablement space for 12 to 15 years now. I started as an actual facilitator in a classroom with 30 people in a room and saw the magic and delight that happens in those types of experiences. I then spent about a half a decade at Coursera, where I led the customer success organization, thinking about how to drive outcomes of learning, patted ourselves on the back with like 200 million learners on the platform, with, if you know anything about asynchronous experiences, a sub 5% completion rate and, you know, MOOCs, in charge of, in charge of success, but like impossible to get human behavior to change, to consume that type of modality. Ran into a colleague and friend of mine, Julia Stiglitz, who's our CEO and founder of Uplimit. And she was like, the goal is to do both. How do you take the beauty of what happens in a 30-person in-person experience and scale it the way a MOOC does without losing the outcomes of the experience? And so Uplimit has been on this journey for the past 4 years, and we have two sort of like core obsessions that we think about on a daily basis. One is efficiency. So like the beyond the hype of AI, Dave, is like the thing I've been sort of like noodling and pushing and poking around on, married with like not losing the outcomes, because most people in our industry are like, more scale equals less outcomes, and then it's a losing game for everyone. And so how do you get to both?
That's a really great intro. And I particularly like the connect to Coursera, where I've been recently reconnecting with them both as when I was working at Atlassian, we were using them. But now individually, I got a subscription to it for the year, and I've just been learning a lot of stuff just to see what's out there. It's coming along. It's more than just a regular MOOC anymore. And we're not talking about that. We're talking about a new model of how we're approaching this. So with that, that's a great introduction. Josh, tell us about yourself. I'm really interested in learning about you. Like I said, pre-gaming, I saw Clay on the subway in New York City a couple months back. And I go, what is that? That looks cool. Looked him up online. So I need to learn more about that. And lo and behold, here we are. So tell me about yourself. Tell me about your journey and what you do at your company.
Well, it's funny because those subway ads, I'll just do a quick story. I have so many friends who've been like, oh, I see the subway ads. And what does it do? I still don't get it. So our head of finance is always dubious on the ROI of those ads, but I think surround sound is definitely very helpful for us. People remember them. There's lots of ads on the subway. So ongoing debate. That said, my background, a little bit all over the place. I would say the main threads that are important for this conversation is similar to Zaid. I started out in the classroom. I was a high school teacher, sort of teaching interdisciplinary CS and art in like a very progressive experiential learning way. So I never had a formal background in education or teaching, which is why I was hired for that position.
Yeah.
And then I sort of just became obsessed with progressive education, right? I like watched all of the Ken Robinson videos, the Sugata Mitra, the Seth Godins of the world, was fortunate enough to work with Seth on a program called Alt MBA for a while, which was his sort of response to MOOCs, I think, at the time, being like, can we design an immersive online 98% completion rate program? And the answer is yes. So then I became obsessed with the problem of what Zaid is talking about. How do we scale that experience, right? I saw just how you could design an online experience that in its own way was actually even more transformational than a lot of in-person experiences are, because there are unique things you can do in online learning environments that are just not possible in in-person learning environments. Yeah. And so actually molding the way that we teach to the online medium has wonderful impacts on learning outcomes, but there's just no software designed or built to do it, which actually comes back into how and why we use Uplimit today.
That is really cool. So kind of circling back around to that, I remember being in Seattle and talking, Zaid, with you for the first time. And I said, I came out of this, we had dinner, you talked about stuff. We really was inspiring because there were a lot of leaders in there that were talking about the same thing. And I walked away from that going, oh my, I need to learn more because this isn't an LMS conversation anymore. We were talking about AI and how we're engaging with people. And these were leaders of the, all these big companies. That's where we are right now, that the listeners in our audience are really struggling in a lot of ways. We're trying to figure out how to do, it's just what you're talking about. Like, how do we make things like a lot more immersive, a lot more interesting, move some of it online, detach those Zaid, when you're talking about live learning, I mean, I'm back and doing that right now. In fact, you know, I'm doing some of it today with a big audience. And it's just like, how can we detach parts and then focus on the stuff that you really need to be in front of a human being to see the light go on and actively work with them. But then there's that offloading of things that I need to fill my brain with. And you know, I'm new in my new role at Vast Data. Here I'm like trying to part all this stuff around. I don't have like the concept of a cadence, and AI really isn't behind all of this when I'm looking more traditional, normal type content. So tell me a little bit more about the product, and then we'll kind of like get into moving beyond the hype, which is where I really want to throw down some heavyweight talk.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I've talked a lot about sort of like this sucker's choice that a lot of folks in our industry have had over the past decade or so. And I don't mean it in like a
sucker's choice. I like that.
A sucker's choice, right? Like kind of what we were talking about. Either I scale through async and get no outcomes, or I spend a gazillion dollars and go ask my CEO for a billion dollar budget to facilitate these like high impact experiences that can scale. And I'm not going to do that. And so I am sort of forced to push out the traditional asynchronous sort of like passive learning experiences, or those like while you cook learning experiences. And so what the choices that we're making is access or outcomes. And so I think beyond the hype and the fad, like the future is there's now all of these things that people like us who have been in the enablement space know are best in class experiences that typically you couldn't reach without the technology that we have today, which didn't exist even 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
And so there's like the, from the Uplimit perspective, we think about it as, how do we take, to your exact point, around all of the things that fill a typical enablement or learning person's mind and have AI take care of those things? So one of the functionalities we have on our platform, which we call Copilot, which is the sort of like a cohort management tool. So Uplimit has like two products that we provide today. One is if you're already running cohorts, blended sort of interactive experiences, maybe it's like onboarding for your customer use case, typically run over like a week or two experience. These are very heavy administration for these types of programs. And so our platform takes that exact learning experience and removes all of the like crap that comes with running these types of experiences. So everything from like tracking learner participation to tracking attendance of live sessions to grouping learners and then nudging them to say, hey, you 7 did project 1, showed up to live session 2, but didn't do blah. You're not having to build these like wildly complex pivot tables to tell you of my 500 learners, who did what and who didn't do what and who do I need to engage with. And then everything from like surveying learners is automated in a way on our platform that then just gives you insights, because we went through and learned a ton about what each learning or enablement team is doing in a world where they're running these programs and how much administration is being spent on these types of tools. And then the other part of it is like, okay, that's great. If we can automate a ton of that, how do we start to increase the outcomes that come from these learning? And any of us in education or learning know it's like get people practicing as quickly as possible. So it's introducing all of these different AI practice modalities. So everything from role plays to brainstorms to uploading a screen recording and getting immediate AI feedback on it, so that you're not having to like, there's a case study coming out, and I'll share here with GE Healthcare, who said it saved 2,800 hours for each of their subject matter expert groups.
Good Lord.
Because role plays were just running. You can upload a rubric onto the platform. It'll just give learners immediate feedback. This was all done as like 30-minute conversations with a subject matter expert over a 6-month period for 500 learners. So like the efficiency while getting people to practice is critical. The other sort of functionality we've built that I think the Clay team is starting to play with a little bit right now is this tool called Sparks, which is also the like construct of, we as enablement people were slowing down our own organization's ability to iterate and push product out. So folks used to spend 6 to 8 weeks on product cycle launches and then think about how to enable those people. And so when we would talk to a lot of our enablement partners and our learning friends, they'd say, we're feeling really uncomfortable because our CTO is saying, hey, we've updated the product, or we've added a new functionality. How mm-hmm. quickly can you get this out to all of our customer base and to our go-to-market teams? And typically, from a course creation perspective, the answer was like 6 to 8 to 12 weeks, depending on the organization. And okay. so Sparks lets you create like a very small amount of content that's then married directly with a practice, and you can push it out as a way to reinforce these bigger programs, or as like an update to, hey, we know we just taught you that the product does blah, 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 but now the product does XYZ. And so I'm pushing the Spark out to you to reinforce that or to teach you this new functionality.
That is really intriguing to me. Yash, can you provide some, I'm moving around in my script just a little bit here because I'm going to jump on to getting into AI, but can you unpack that a little bit more in your context? Because what I'm hearing now is something that's really resonated with me. One, the lag time to get content out is ridiculous. We know that because there's a lot of, a lot of instructional designers like to be nitpicky and be perfect, right? We don't have time for that. We need to get to the customer as soon as possible. And when you have, I always talk about this thing called 0-day learning, which is just like a 0-day and a virus that launches. When our product goes live, there's learning componentry that I can start to push out, whether it's perfect or not. That's not the problem. So, right. So Yash, what are you experiencing?
So I would say there's a couple of things that I'll mirror what Zaid is saying, right? Like number one is that what you're talking about right now, Dave, is absolutely true. We were actually just talking about this on the team last week. We used to push out our content basically instantly with product updates because I would just sit down and record looms. Like I know it like the back of my head and I can mm-hmm. just do it very easily. We sort of got slower because we wanted to increase production quality on the content. And then ultimately, customers don't care, right? Customers just want the information. They will happily take a crappy Loom video of me walking through the software 2 weeks earlier than like a nicely polished Yash in the studio video. So we're moving back to that ship at customer speed mentality. And I think that the really important way this dovetails with Uplimit, I constantly tell our team, if you think about learning or education as a product, I think mm-hmm. traditional school and like most traditional online learning were the worst products designed for education. Right, it's content consumption, it's command and control, it's like obedience, information recall. None of these things are skill development areas. I want people to actually understand what they're doing. For us, it's a failure mode. If someone knows how to go build, let's say, an outbound clay table or a CRM clay table, but then has no clue how to use any of our other use cases, right? That's not learning. That's like you've learned how to regurgitate what buttons to click. And so a lot of what we are doing is utilizing the Uplimit platform to provide sort of these like mindset skills, like tell me how you would think about this go-to-market problem. List for me what the areas you would have to focus on are. We are training the mindset with these exercises in addition to the actual practical table exercises that we build. And so we have everything through an exercise-based component, and the community component is probably my favorite part. Like my favorite thing watching one of our enterprise cohorts launching last week was watching students helping other students in the program. And it's not just this selfish, like, oh, we don't have to hire a TA to go help other people. I often talk about don't rob someone else of their aha moment. And I think oftentimes the most powerful aha moment for a learner is actually helping another learner, because you formulated this very specific idea of how you understand something and then massaging that into a slightly different format to help communicate it to somebody else is really the most powerful mastery you can be doing.
But that's like the non-sucker's choice, right? Like that's the good teaching, good learning, good enablement is actually on human behavior change, not ability to repeat something. Right. But the world didn't really like have the technology, the capability to do that at scale. So if anyone listening either of you are familiar with like the Bloom's Two Sigma, like, we could give people a individual tutor, then we solve all the education problems in the world. But a decade ago, no one was going to do that. You weren't going to hire a million TAs to do it. And so could tools facilitate that like beautiful marriage of like having people coach each other and teach each other and give opportunity to practice and think about how to do their jobs differently, as opposed to I know where the button is and I can click the button.
Right.
I am just in this few minutes where you're both talking, you both said really crucial things, which I feel like this is where we're moving beyond the hype right now. So we'll transition to that kind of section. But these are the challenges that I always see where, okay, you hire somebody, you get them to build an enablement, you know, it's the same dry garbage that you always see. You put it into some kind of a shell of an LMS you force people to go through it and the CEO says, oh, you checked the box, you did the thing, you know it. I just went through my training at VAST and I said, okay, well, I went through like the words, right? I saw videos, did all that stuff, and I can pass the test. What does that really prove? So what I want, which we have, and that's part of my job to build all this out, is we do have labs, we do have touch points, we do have things. Getting on the product as fast as we can, getting to the outcomes desired. Now we're talking the language of customer success. We're not talking, you know, traditional. Well, we're going further with Kirkpatrick. We're ironically, by these new tools and the things, we're getting to that point where we can correlate or start to causate actions. That we'll probably get to that sometime here, where you have to have product usage data too. But until we have that, you know, we can show some other things. So let's get to moving on the hype. And this is where, Zay, I wanted you to talk about your bold statement that you had when we were talking online, which is, I'm prompting you.
Yeah. You know, I've been on this soapbox for a couple of months now, which it feels like the enablement learning space has moved beyond sort of the like, what is AI? How do I use AI? How do I think about AI? And, you know, Uplimit, you know, we've been talking about machine learning and AI for about a year and a half before ChatGPT even hit the scene. And yep. Most of my conversations kind of went something like, what are you doing about AI? And then someone saying, we don't think it's a big deal. And I was like, I think it's going to be a big deal. And then ChatGPT came out that November and sort of changed the whole world. I think what is going to shift in a world sort of past the hype is a couple of things. Want to what you're talking about, Dave. One is that, like, if you are today in your job measuring completion as the way in which you track success of your program, you are going to fail. Because where the world is going is to actual business impact from enablement, which I've been in the space for a gazillion years, it feels like some days. And what I really learned was that was the only measurement of success we really had, which is I had 1,000 learners, I put them into the program, 900 finished, 90%, high five, we feel good about that. But I couldn't gather and track what actually happened after the training. And I actually don't think we're like 100% there, but I think as a tool set, as a technology, we're moving towards that space. And so we have like a large professional services partner that we work with who can actually track 12% skill improvement post doing these practices on our platform, which, like, if you think about the ROI of that for customer enablement, if like Josh and Clay and Databricks and a lot of the customers that are using the Uplimit platform can say, if we can move the skill attainment by even a single percent across, you know, Databricks has 750,000 learners. Yash, I think you all have had several thousand learners in the short time that we've been working together. The impact on usage and ROI and time to value becomes measurable, which switches the matrix of the conversations that we all have to have with CFOs, which is, why are we spending so much money on this? And typically we'd say, because look at all these people that like said they had a really great experience and then finished the training and then never logged back into the platform, which is not the thing we want. If we can start to say, person A does this program or does this enablement experience, and then they ramp up their usage of our product, that is like the weight our industry has always been looking for. And it is not completion rates.
No. Gosh, I'm curious.
Thing is yes and on this, right? So like I'll give an example of something that's exactly what Zaid is talking about. I think we at Clay have had this cohorts program for a bit. It was our experiment in, literally the thesis was, can we do alt MBA for software education? And I think the answer is yes, especially in the era of AI. What made alt MBA so successful, to Zaid's point, is the ratio was 1 to 10 humans to coaches or students to coaches. We can't afford a 1 to 10 student to teacher ratio for the things we're running here, but AI enables us to make that ratio 1 to 50, 1 to 100, and still keep the level of personalization for the individual. Can dive into that later. The thing that I think ties to what Zaid is talking about is completion rates, I think, are still relevant, but they're like bare minimum table stakes, and you have to design for completion rate correctly. So example here is, big problem for us on the enterprise customer onboarding side was we were hearing consistently from all of our enterprise growth strategists that they were spending their first 2, even 3 calls with customers onboarding them and regurgitating a lot of what we already have content on Clay 101. And so the solution here is not go force all of your enterprise customers to watch content on Clay 101 so that they know what you're talking about. No one's going to love you for that. The solution is how can we create and design a interesting, fun, delightful experience that actually gets people to what enterprise growth strategists want them to accomplish by day one. Because I think the world we're trying to move to is one-to-one human connection and conversation is probably never going away, in my opinion. I know some people think you'll have totally AI customer success and totally AI salespeople. I think ultimately differentiation will always be one-to-one human. But we can also then build programs that create and get people to the levels and the mindsets that we need. So as a concrete example, with the enterprise onboarding that we have, a lot of the growth team uses onboarding complete as a metric of, okay, this customer is ready to actually ramp up usage and think about the product more strategically. That requires having built one concrete deployable workflow in their instance. And they were spending a whole month, maybe even a month and a half or two, getting that workflow up and running. Now what we have is a program where people can send their customers, once they sign, before they ever even meet with their strategist, to a cohort that we run an upLimit. They go through exercises. We measure completion by, have you completed the full first workflow that we've asked you to do? And then we give you feedback on that workflow and automate it. And then that workflow becomes the starting basis for the conversation on day one with the growth strategist. So now you're immediately moving into value creation and strategy instead of, let me get you to play catch up with where you need to go and add further stress to your plate.
But that's the shift, Yash, right? Like that's the completion is always going to be a leading metric we're going to watch, right? Because we want to know, are people engaging with the material. But for decades, maybe a decade and a half now, we measured that by things like, how much time did they watch this video for? Mm-hmm. How much time did they sit on this page? Did they click next in a meaningful way? Did they say the answer was B on the something. Quiz? Yeah, redoing quizzes over and over again. But what you're describing is like actually how you get to ROI, which is this person is doing the thing you want them to learn how to do from a behavior change, grading it, and then if they can complete that thing, they have completed their onboarding experience, right? Like that's the dream, and that's the stuff that used to take an army of like peer or like course or program or project submission and reviewers. That today, the technology, like you can do a role play types experience on our platform where folks can like share their screen or record their screen doing the thing you want them to do and then upload it onto the platform. And then ASR AI is going to grade it against a rubric that you upload and give the learner immediate feedback. So instead of having one of these, you can have 40 of these in your experience. Mm-hmm. And the learner is practicing and trying different things. And then you can send them a spark where they're like, new thing just came out. Like Clay announced some really cool new functionality last week or 2 weeks ago now, maybe, Yash. Like, how do you very quickly teach all of your graduates this new functionality through a spark? Here's what it is. Practice it, upload it. You get a little check that you've completed. But what we've done is made sure you actually understand how to use this thing.
Oh, wow. Okay, let me ask you a deeper question. So I've got a lot of questions now coming out of this, because that whole, you know, role play and the uploading a video and showing my work, right? This is what, okay, you know, kids in school, like, you show your work. Yeah, I know you know the number, but this has been the dream of learning because, okay, yeah, I'll go and have a lab. I'll go back and make a short story out of this. I taught a lot at university. I taught labs where we were teaching, you know, database design, web design, video game design. And unless my students were actively working on that and I was floating around, or I had, in this case, I had a real expensive, well-kitted out lab. So I can go to, you know, Yash, I'm pulling up your screen on the big screen. We're going to go through this. This is a learning moment. I'm not embarrassing you. You got stuck. And it's helping everybody because they're like, oh yeah, that's me too. Okay. So now we're getting that. Oh, I am enlightened because I'm actually using the product. The question I have for you too, and Yash, this may be too specific, is, so I'm hearing tendrils of product usage data. Are you able to put into your data warehouse the platform data using, you know, Pendo, Gainsight, CX, you know, whatever, and then correlate that back to show those endpoints are hitting in HubSpot or Salesforce or whatever your engine is?
So I'll jump in first here, and I'll add like a layer of nuance because Zayd and I have talked about this at length, right?
Good. Yeah, this is exciting to me.
Two things. So we do have this data at Clay, right? Like we have all of our product data in a data warehouse. We're able to call it, store it, make reports from it, the whole works. We have a basic product activation linked to each cohort dashboard setup. The problem is when you create a program like that, you need to change the definition of your activation metric, right? Mm-hmm. Because right now our activation metric is based on if a user just comes in blind to the software, what are the actions that we know they would need to take on their own without any previous guidance in order to become a relatively activated user? We, in the programs that we are developing and running, are forcing and guiding people to do more than just those actions. So we've essentially hacked the activation metric where 100% of people who graduate the programs that we've built are all 100% activated. But what we're looking at and need to measure long term is, does that activation last? Are these the right people? And then that gets a little bit more complex because activation is different from ICP. So the real concrete example I would say here is we have a really high activation rate on Clay 101 cohorts, and that's great. But also we're activating people who may not actually be the right paying customers because Clay 101 is open to everyone. That's more a marketing motion than it is a sales motion. That's why we launched the enterprise cohort. Activation there is much more critical to enterprise plan usage. And then we're about to design a whole pre-sales cohort, and we're about to design a cohort for outbound and ads and just activating people on all of the most important product surface areas that we have.
That merits a whole other discussion. I mean, I'm continuing to have this with people over time and trying to show people how to do that, but it's very sophisticated. And I think this is what underscores the complexity of learning. Because again, if you go back to I track completion rates, I track smile sheets. That's leading indicators. You're doing the lagging indicator. You're doing the actual, I click the button and you have segmented data probably by account, by user level. Probably in the message, I'll say as a former enterprise security professional that we do this in a very, very at rest and in motion secured, you know, motif. So your data is safe. We're not going to do anything with that. But it's important because now if I can correlate that and see a dashboard and go, yes, you did this and this, and I saw you had this outcome. I won't even go further because when I know people get into scenarios where, let's say we released a new part of our product and I can actually see people butting up against the wall with they keep trying and trying and trying to do something in this functional area of the product. Now I can flag product. I can go back to my education enablement team and mitigate that with, oh, well, you need a little bit more because we didn't do quite something right in the product and there's a little sticky point. Now we train to that, but that could be one of your sparks where it's, okay, now get over this. You've probably seen it, boom. But the point that you're making here is now that we're bridging the gap with the AI, more kind of like not just drip feeds, but targeted, personalized flow to get people enabled in cohort groups, to give them the more verbs, more tools, and to be able to correlate that with actual activity on product.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I'll go back to what you said earlier around like AI is going to replace customer success and enablement. It's not. No. Like we've had a debt across our function for a long time. It was a data debt. It was an admin debt. It was all of these things that we were spending a ton of our time doing.
Technical debt.
All kinds, like endless, right? Like when we talk to learning teams today, even outside of the customer enablement space, like what we hear is, oh, AI is going to replace all of our L&D people. And it's like, no, it's not. You have a running list of 47 programs your company's asking you to build and deliver and track and measure metrics and outcomes from those, but you just ignore them and play the priority game every single year because time is finite. And so what if AI, you just sort of spun it up and focused it at all of the crap that none of us really want to be doing in our day-to-day life so that we can free up the time to do exactly what you're describing, Dave, which is like, how do we step back and correlate like learner seven on a learning experience, completed the program, did all the projects. I can see them in my data lakehouse or in my data that they are from a time to value, to a usage perspective, to an innovating on our platform perspective, sort of matching in a really interesting way to tell the story that like, which we all know, this is why our industry exists. There's a correlation between really good enablement and really good product usage. This is not a mystery. We just couldn't tell the story between those two things. So what if we focused our resources on that instead of did learner 12 attend or not attend, or did learner 12 understand how to submit or not submit? Like, that, who cares about that? What we care about is the more enablement I do that's high quality, the better usage of my product there is. And that's the North Star.
When you say high quality, you mean learning the people actually want to do on their schedule in their moment that's relevant, right? Yeah. It's not the go do 101. Oh my dear God, you know, I'm going to spend five hours going grinding through this terrible, horrifying stuff when it's, I want to express a cohort. I'm put into that group. Now I'm getting, you know who I am. You know what I need to do, hopefully. And now you're progressing over time, overcoming things like the Ebbinghaus forgetting curve and stuff, because you're touching, kicking the ball, getting in the product. And now I care, right? It's not gosh, I've seen so many companies that just throw all this stuff at you. And then guess what? Nothing. Or the CSMs are enabling people and nobody, and they don't even be aware of a learning program. That's interesting.
I mean, we see this all the time, right? When we talk to most organizations, definitely never Clay, what we see is they have some very traditional LMS that some CRO or CCO said, hey, we need to have enablement for our customers. And they put 500 asynchronous courses on there that are immediately outdated and then push most of their customer base towards that content. And then we'll secretly tell you, but our customer success managers, when the customer is important, will have 500 live meetings with a customer to make sure they're successful. And that's how they're solving the problem right now, right? They're not putting these resources on enablement. They're putting them as CSMs. And then the CSMs are like hand-to-hand combating this all day long. And so what if... I know, it's still happening all the time, right? Like, what if you stopped doing that and thought differently about what you were offering people? And Yash, this is like your hypothesis. So I'm curious if you can
This was my next question.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's essentially the issue, right? Like, what Dave is talking about is, I understand if I am a new customer to Clay, I can go to the university and I can watch all the Clay 101 and all the ABM and all the inbound videos, and I can get the knowledge. But then after spending hours going through the content myself, I still have to translate that knowledge into practice for what I'm doing at my company today. That's the big obstacle for people who are busy professionals, don't have the time to go through a bunch of training, and then still have to do the hard work of actually applying the learning context that they're getting. And so typically speaking, the most busy people you work with are probably the most important ones you want to be using your product. That's the way that we've built a lot of the SaaS. And so a lot of the cohort experience that we have designed using Uplimit is not just exercise-based, but it's also context-based. So let's take the enterprise cohort as an example. I could have you go in and make this arbitrary exercise. It would make it easier on us for standardizing learning outcomes, making sure everyone's doing the same project, having a rubric. And for more basic cohorts, we do that so that we can scale the feedback mechanisms there. But when it really matters, we are actually doing one-to-one learning at scale. So every single customer, let's say we have a 50-person enterprise customer cohort, is personally thinking about strategizing and building the very first workflow that they need to use at their organization today. They're able to do that in their own context because of the role plays, because of the sparks. We're able to actually brainstorm the right ideas. They then go into this asynchronous Slack community where they get feedback from other peers in their industry. This is maybe one of the most slept on things about cohorts and community. We don't like learning alone. Who likes learning alone? Who likes
staring at their computer screen? Social learning is all of it. That's why we went to university or high school.
If you're lost on something, are you going to listen to the AI bot that you're maybe sure is hallucinating? Or are you going to listen to the peer of yours who's been doing your same job for the last 3 years at a separate company that you admire? Always the second. Right? Community-based learning is actually how all learning happens. I just don't think we've ever really thought about it that way. I think all of my most powerful learning moments in school were with friends, not listening to a teacher's lecture. So you have that community.
Study groups, right?
Yeah.
It was like the dirty little secret of our industry, right? Learning is inherently social. We all know this, but it also costs $1 billion to have social learning run. So and that's exactly what we're talking. Like, that's where AI helps, right? Like, take out the admin of facilitating social learning and let the social beauty of like learning together, study groups, all the things we're talking about become sort of more at the forefront. And then it also, you know, like the thing we talk about, especially with customer education, and be interested, Dave and Yash, like how you guys see this, is you're building evangelists. Like, it's not just product enablement. It's also like you want people to be obsessed with you. And no one is obsessed with watching a 45-minute YouTube video on how to use your product. Like, it's just not. Like, it's just,
no, not at all.
They might get what they need and then know where the button is, and then your company will move the button 5 minutes later. But, like, you're building evangelists. And so togetherness is how you do that.
Yeah. I'll actually say, here's a dirty little secret of the enterprise cohort as well, right? Mm. One of the things that we strongly encourage people to do is to post on LinkedIn about what they're building.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, people are so much more likely to post on LinkedIn when they are proud of something that they have built, because now it goes from Clay is a company telling me to go post on LinkedIn, like they must have an incentive in me doing that. Sure, we do. But I explicitly tell people, I don't care if you mention Clay or not. Very genuinely, the reason to be posting on socials is to build your community, right? To continue to build these connections and this industry beyond this cohort experience. And so a lot of people will naturally mention Clay, and they will also talk about, like, look at what I did. Look at what I built. People are proud of learning when it happens correctly. And then other people are really inspired by learning that happens correctly, because then they say, oh, I want to be able to do something like that. That's cool. How do I? And that social virus is the best way to bring enrollment into any program that you're running.
Oh, you're giving me goosebumps here, because that is... I'm not going to riff on the stories I've got. I have a ton of them. Everybody knows them. But it's that moment of joy that comes through people working with other people and going, oh, yeah, like you just said, hey, can I get that from you, Jane? And sure. And then that person now becomes more influential, is teaching for you. You're delegating the learning role, the enablement role, out to the edge. And now more people are catching onto the product. Which is why I'm a big advocate of things like TikTok and YouTube and shorts, and not just for long form, but for micro, where you say something bold or show something contentious, and then I have to go try that myself. I'm loading my Clay environment. I'm doing some stuff, and I'm like, oh my God, I did it too. And then I jump on the thread, and now you've got this. This is what our life should be. It shouldn't be, look, I did training. Here's my badge.
Yeah.
Right.
Ever seen that? There's this like meme that I'm remembering now. It's like Mario, regular Mario. It's the like mushroom fire flower. Uh-huh. Yet,
and then it's like
a giant fire Mario, right? And then the entrepreneurship version of this meme is, this isn't what your product sells, pointing to the fire flower. This is. It's the giant fire Mario. I think you can say the exact same thing about most education. The previous era has been everyone trying to make sure you know what the fire flower is. It's multiple choice assessments. It's essays. It's writing. It's like the, can you pass the compliance that checks the box for whether or not you did the thing? But then everyone knows what the flower is. No one has actually eaten the flower or obtained the flower, right? What you actually want is people to be Fire Mario. And then when people are Fire Mario, people see that from everywhere else. And they're like, oh, I also want to be Fire Mario. And then that creates the sort of social learning effect you want to take place.
It's on fire. Okay, guys, we've got a short amount of time today. And this has already gone the direct end. I couldn't have hoped better for something. I'm wanting you to lean in on further is how AI really, how you are leveraging AI in different capacities, right? Make this real for me that, okay, you know, I know right now the verbs we have in learning and enablement are, okay, like what I did recently at VAST is I'm trying to onboard myself to learn all this material. I literally exported everything and exported myself talking through, learning through all the things. I threw it all in a notebook LM environment, and now I'm querying it and I'm bringing out, you know, detecting different things and figuring out how to up-level everything and how to make it better. What I'm interested in too is like, okay, we've got the concept of personalization, points in time, a cadence of delivery. What do I do? How does the content get molded or modified by AI? How am I using AI to subsume and to distill the huge amount of content? Like the example might be, I uploaded a video of me doing the thing. Now I can show I did this. I get a score on it. No humans in the loop. So I'm really interested to hear you narrate, you know, the practicality of how this is threading through everything that you're developing. And Yash, like, what is it that's so cool about this that's really extending the capability? Keeping in mind things like, the one thing I wanted to go back to was the CSM problem. I recently had an experience where my entire company lifted and shifted away from scaled digital success and on-demand enablement, and now leaned back into hiring tons and tons of CSMs to train people. And I go, this, you're doing the wrong thing. I can't support this. right? What we really should be doing is changing the way we conduct these. And cohorts were a big part of what we should have been doing there. That's what I'm going to be working on. So let's just use our last 10 minutes or so just to riff a little bit. Give me something, you know, something that you're seeing. Tell me a little bit more about how AI is represented in the platform and in your life.
Yeah, I'm happy to jump first here. I think that I would actually take a step back even, and I'll get checked in a second. And I would say that the biggest problem I see with people trying to apply AI to the learning experience is that it's an imagination gap. It's you're not thinking properly about what AI is supposed to be doing, actually. I'm going to use my partner here. So my partner is a third grade teacher. She's wonderful. She's very resistant to using AI, even as she is going through grad school, right? When I tell her, you could be using AI to help you better understand all of the readings that she has to do. She's a full-time teacher doing grad school. She has mountains of pages to read through, and then she's reading them and she's up late at night and she's not sure if she's actually understood something. And so she thought what I meant was use AI to summarize and condense all the like intense information from these long research papers and then just read that. That's not what I meant. And I think what you have to start with is, what is your learning objective and how would you measure that from a competency-based perspective? So if I apply that principle to readings, how do I actually measure if you understood the reading? I would probably ask you a couple of pointed questions about the most important concepts, and I wouldn't give you a multiple choice quiz because then you could still guess right on chance. I would ask you to describe to me what you think those principles are. Super concretely, I would even give you a hypothetical example of the principles at play in the reading that I gave you and ask you to then apply those principles to what you would turn that into. So for a teacher, right, if I'm trying to create English learner accessible material, the way to digest the reading is not, here are the three principles. The way to digest the reading is, here is a complex sentence structure. Now, using the techniques from the article that you have learned, make it more accessible for an English learner student. And then you apply that principle to SaaS, right? It's not, how do I log into my software? It's not, how do I build a list in Clay? How do I build a company's people search filter? It is actually, what is my ICP? What am I trying to do? How do I obtain business revenue results? And then how do I translate that to the software tool that I'm using?
Brilliantly said.
I think about it. What I have observed is a lot of teams, organizations, and people that I work with, like hearing and seeing ways that people are using AI and then trying to replicate those things. And I think that's what like the fad was to our earlier conversation.
Yeah,
today, which is was. Like,
ooh, look at this. Crap. It's pretty
like,
shiny.
Yeah. And then it like doesn't work for them or it doesn't apply exactly the way they need to. I think where I've seen the best use of AI across both like learning teams and then like not learning teams is to deeply sit back. And a little bit of the example you shared, Yash, about your partner is like, don't worry about how other people and other teams are using AI. Go through your organization, go through your day-to-day, understand where are the specific workflows that you are spending time on as a team that could be automated by AI to create more efficiency across your organizations. So it's like the amount of time enablement teams spend on data analysis, like that is not a thing you need to do anymore in the same way if you have access to the data, which is, I think, the thing we all struggle with.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
It's the hard part, yeah. But there's everything from like, you know, one of our big customers who makes, it's a gaming company. They were hiring 100 producers a year to run cohorts. And it's like, stop doing that and start to think about where can AI be plugged in, whether it's a platform like Uplimit or I don't know if anyone's played with Claude's new slide creator that came out. Are we got like, holy crap. Like if right? I will literally never build another slide again. And like we knew and it's evolving so fast. So don't give up on these things. Like I think we've all used chat to create slides and all been sort of disappointed because it changes branding and colors. And then you have to edit to death. And you're like, well, I could have just built the slide. It's like you can build, upload a template in a Google Doc and Claude will build a whole presentation for you. And it is on point. Like we saw a bunch of these at our company kickoff last week. That was unbelievable of what people were building with these. And so I think it's like that, like the post fad world for all teams, like whether you're a learning team, an enablement team, or a sales team, it's stepping back and thinking about where is it that we spend a lot of time and what are the AI tools that we can plug in that will help drive efficiency in this space.
Yeah. So within Uplimit specifically, could you cite a couple of the, you know, the key areas where you've molded AI? And again, I'm talking more specifically, like, okay, now one of the things I've seen in one platform I've been using was now they've actually superimposed a chat agent in the platform. And now I can do natural language. Hey, I need to get a report for XYZ. Normally that would have been a lot before. Or, hey, I need to drill down and find all the places in my whatever material that are out of date. Or, you know, I don't know. Or like, give me a little bit more examples of what you're delivering. And I know we're going to have to wrap up here soon, but
yeah.
A couple good ones.
So I'll talk about sort of like what I think today on platform is really powerful. And then I'll also talk about like what's coming very quickly. That's okay, cool. Really exciting because the technology is moving super fast. So what we did as we were building the platform is we looked across like where are the teams that we work with spending the most amount of time on admin or like BS type work. So like course creation was a really painful, like slow slog that we've talked about before. So on our platform, you can physically upload things like slide decks or a tech talk from when you're product leaders or a product doc with 50 bullets in it, and it'll generate a whole course for you, including AI role plays that you can go through and edit. And what most of our partners say is like, holy crap, it gets us about 90% of the way there, right? If anyone's telling you AI is going to solve all your problems, they're still lying to you. Maybe in a couple of years, this will be there. But like, imagine a world where like big organizations, instead of spending 40, 50, 250 hours building a course, are spending 5 editing a course that was generated by AI. The other is like the delivery problem, right? There's a lot of administration that runs with delivery. So everything, like we have a AI nudging infrastructure that will group learners for you and tell you these 75 learners are doing good, send them this nudge. And this nudge is delivered through Teams or Slack or whatever modality you prefer.
Oh, wow.
These learners are your naughty learners. They are not doing shit. So like, let's send them this nudge. And that nudge is generated by AI. And then the last piece of this is around insights. So like as people go through the experience, what are the data and the insights that we're gathering around the learning experience? Where we're going is around this concept of personalization, which is really exciting. And so so like the new sort of like in beta product that we have today is Ace RAI, which can be renamed Yosh if you'd like. And if you're running this, and what it'll do is it'll pop up to a learner and say, hey, Dave, I'm going to teach you this concept. And you're going to have a personalized tutor that's going to walk you through this concept, asking you questions like, what's your role? Where are you of this, right? Like, let's get rid of the stuff of like where you have to learn for 3 hours, stuff you already know, because the learning experience isn't personalized. And then based off of that AI conversation, it's going to create a personalized learning or role play experience for you that's very custom to you. So like if you're in go-to-market, it's like, okay, who are you pitching to? Oh, you sell in government? Great. Like, let me teach you how we pitch this product going forward for like partner enablement ecosystems. And oh, great. Like, you pitch to this level and you mostly focus on like, you know, parks and recs. Great. I'm going to create a scenario and a role play for you that's specific to your world and how you do your job daily. And then the other thing we're working on, which is really, really cool, is reporting for most learning platforms has always been static in many ways. Like what you get is blah, 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 blah. But where we're going is a world where you have an agent where you can ask it questions about all of the data that we have, and it'll create different dashboards and data sets for you and pull insights for you based off of all of the data we're collecting across the learning experience, so that somebody like Yosh can be like, I don't need to hire a data scientist to spend 50 hours a week doing this. I'm just going to go ask Uplimits AI on all of the data that it has around like, what does it look like when learners hit this point? Or what does it look like when learners, you know, get stuck? Or what are the typical concepts they're learning versus not learning in the platform? And it'll start to AI generate these insights for you, so that like that data insight analytics work kind of slows down and becomes less of a burden on those teams.
That's that is exciting to me, because that's where we as professionals in learning, no matter who we are, where we are, even L&D, right? It's this ability to introspect and get deeper learning about. I love the nudge idea. I have a cohort group of people that aren't doing this stuff. Well, a great scenario of that is, look, I've got an upcoming training. I'm going to be there live because you wanted me to do that. We have only a certain amount of time. And that personalization at that level you're talking about, I'd seen several different things. I saw Saul Khan talk one year at an event about showing coaching, like that coaching tool. That is one of that concept that you're talking about is one of the most impactful things for me, because like, let's imagine I'm a salesperson. I've got a call with Hewlett Packard or some big company. I need to know the industry, the discipline. I need to know the people I've got to work with and what they know. you know, I might be going over to Salesforce or whatever to get that. But when I'm in platform, if I know a little bit about all of those industries and I can find that and surface that material that's relevant to me, I'm cutting out hours of my time because I'm a salesperson and that's where I make the money, right? It's different for customer education because now we're looking, not necessarily, now we're looking at adoption, retention, call deflection, avoiding churn, getting people to the sticky level. And if you're not personalizing that, you say, just go to this class. It's 5 hours. Oh, God, right? I know half this stuff. I know that it, this was a funny story and relevant. At Atlassian, we were doing a lot of training, re-engaging with organizations that were very big enterprises, like thousands of users. And one of the inherent problems with going into that mode of training, particularly live, was you've got graybeards in there like, I know this stuff. I've been doing this for years. Show me what's the delta, what's different, and then spend the time on that alone. Or giving them the opportunity to do that and then come to a workshop and we'll show you the hard stuff that you've never going to see anywhere else. And that's where I want red carpet trainers who are basically like sales engineers and technical, you know, like the big guns. And now you're going way further. So, okay, you know, we're wrapping up. Yash, any comments from you about how you're seeing AI emerge in your organization and how you're leveraging it uniquely?
No, I think Zaid covered most of them. I think that maybe the like big thing I'll add on to what Zaid is saying at the end here is that because AI is shifting how we think about our work from like, have I checked the box, have I not, to how well have I checked the box? If you think about measuring competency, you are now looking at a spectrum instead of a binary outcome. That means that the way we think about growing analytics, understanding in organizations also has to shift across the spectrum, right? That's part of the actual difficulty I was talking about with product activation. It's no longer this binary, did you activate, did you not? It's how can I measure how well you are using our product across a spectrum before and after a result? And then what are the different treatments I would give to each of those groups, right? Maybe if you're in the least activated bucket, but you went through everything, that's an indication that we need to revisit the material. Maybe if you didn't activate, but because you never tried the material, maybe we just need to figure out how to nudge people or prompt them to actually do the right thing, right? Like now, if you create the diverse realm of analytics that you actually need to measure competency, you actually get very clear understandings of what areas to focus on. And I think that is the gap that a lot of people face is they're maybe trying to implement a competency-based system, but still working on and measuring from sort of a command and control style interface.
I love it. Okay. I could go on for another hour easily. And gentlemen, both this is really the last thing I wanted to mention is, you know, Yash, when you're talking about all like those kinds of deeper metrics and other signals that you're looking for, one term I heard recently was called PEU, platform enabled or paid enabled users. So where you have an activation of a license and you finally got something to pay attention to, and there was another metric that slipped in there that I've never heard of before. And I go, oh, well, that's another gate, right? And the more of these gates I can line up to show people, you know, they're going through the rings or whatever, and they're doing the thing, they're further down their journey and they're probably going to have a much higher MAU in the end.
Exactly.
Oh, cool. Okay. So, all right. With this, we have to wrap up. Again, I could go for forever. You're speaking the language of business and learning, and I really appreciate both of your times, Zaid and Yash, and I want to talk to you more. We'll probably have to come back and do revisit. Anything else what you'd like to say, and particularly like where can we find you? Where can we go learn more? Where can our audience really connect with both of you too?
Yeah. Go ahead, Yash.
Yeah, I was going to say you can connect with me personally on LinkedIn. I do not promise to get back to you in a reasonable time because everyone's sending me messages on LinkedIn.
Yeah, but if
you send me a good message, I will do my best.
Great.
And then you can also always look at all the Clay stuff on university.clay.com.
Yeah, I'm going to go check it out too. I'm really excited. Hey, yeah. For you, you have a URL or something where you can go get a demo and check it out?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to uplimit.com, you can request to either like a demo or simply like join one of our upcoming virtual or in-person events. So we have lots of in-person events, which is how I met Dave and Yash, actually. and so we love having these community opportunities for folks to get together and talk about all that is cutting edge. And advice to people is like, this is our chance to trailblaze. And if you're not trailblazing right now, what does that mean for our industry, for, you know, your function, your team? And it is, and we have permission from our our society to trailblaze in a different way. And so come learn from us how we do it and how others do it and how companies like Clay and Databricks and Sony and Kraft are all sort of doing really cool stuff. And so lots of things to find on our website as well.
I love it. Yeah, and the events that you throw are amazing. I learned so much. You know, I met great people. I got to connect with people I hadn't seen before, and some I did. One of them was a couple of them were friends of mine. So, okay, get out there and check these folks out, check the platforms out. And again, both of you, thanks a lot. Let's do our outro. Again, we'll put links and everything in our show notes so that you can find Uplift. You can find the Clay as well. If you want to learn more, we have a podcast website that's at customer.education. Can't get any easier than that. We're also part of the broader customer education community. There's a lot of places you can go right now for that. We have different sites. As always, you find me on LinkedIn. And special thanks to Alan Cota for our theme music. And finally, here's our ask. If this helps you out, you can help us out by subscribing to our show in Apple Podcast, Overcast, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever. We're out there and everything. Leave a 5-star review for us on Apple because that helps spread it around. And tell a peer, tell a friend. We do this because we're engaging with the people and the vendors in our space that are really, truly making a difference. We don't interview everybody. We don't go out, you know, like this is about the tools that we want to use and are making a difference. So once again, thank you all for joining us. Get out there, educate, enable, experiment, and find your people. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers, everyone. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Josh.
Dave, thanks, Ed.
Thank you.